Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty is at her desk prepping for special Radio Times election coverage. So as the final hours of election 2016 unfold, we thought we'd devote much of this hour's show to what you are thinking as we head to the polls. Any closing thoughts about the candidates, the issues, the rhetoric, and about November 9th, tomorrow? How do we move forward as a country marked by political alienation and what some are calling a national sense of exhaustion? The number to call, 888-477-9499. You can send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And while we're gathering your comments, we're going to check in with Patrick Kirkstra, former editor at Philadelphia Magazine, for a quick refresher on some of the pivotal local elections. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So Democrats are hoping to win control of the U.S. Senate, and they need to gain five seats, just four of Clinton happens to win the White House, Hillary Clinton. In Pennsylvania, all eyes are on the Toomey-McGinty contest. Incumbent Senator Republican Pat Toomey and Democrat Katie McGinty are in a virtual tie, according to some of the latest polls. Does this Senate race, in your opinion, essentially hinge on what happens in the presidential contest?
It probably does. In order for Pat Toomey to win this election, there either has to be a bigger than expected Trump, turnout in Pennsylvania. Trump is going to have to carry the state, or he's going to have to get some serious cross ballot voting. Particularly in the Philadelphia suburbs, and in an election that has been as polarizing as this one, where partisan feelings are as intense as they are right now, I think that the odds of a lot of cross ballot voting are low. So yeah, Pat Toomey's fate, as much as he might hate this, is likely tied to how Donald Trump does in Pennsylvania.
Well, let's get into that a little bit more. Pat Toomey has distanced himself, of course, from Trump. So he began airing an ad late Friday, which features President Obama praising Toomey's support a few years back for a gun bill regarding background checks. And this is all as Katie McGinty is spending the final days of the campaign crisscrossing the state. To the ad, what is Toomey trying to do here?
Well, he's looking for those cross-ballot voters, right? He's looking for independents or relatively conservative Democrats who would be willing to vote for a Republican incumbent senator, even if they hate Donald Trump. This dance that the senator has been forced to do throughout the entire campaign on whether or not he would support Donald Trump continues. Even now, we still don't know who he's going to vote for. He said that he won't vote until 6:45, I believe, this evening. So we won't know until the election is just about over, whether or not our Republican senator will vote for the Republican nominee for president.
Would he even say then?
Who knows? Maybe he'll not. Maybe he'll say that it's a private ballot. So we shall see.
Yeah.
And you understand why he's done it. I mean, it reflects the sort of discomfort that a lot of more mainstream Republicans at the national level have felt with Donald Trump. Anywhere from Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, on down. And Senator Toomey has been caught in a tough place here. And his response has been, not exactly profile and courage. It's been to distance himself from Trump, but not to say outright that he will not be voting for him. So it's a squishy position, and it's a bit squishy because he does need that crossover support in order to win this election. So he can't come out in favor of Trump, and I think that there is some very legitimate personal discomfort that he feels with the presidential candidate for his party.
I'm wondering if that ad might have backfired on him because President Obama, of course, has endorsed Katie McGinty, and he was none too pleased about the Toomey ad.
I doubt that many voters are going to
not looking that closely.
Exactly. So, what he's trying to do is play up the fact that, on gun control and a handful of other issues, he has been, one of the Republican senators who has, worked to cross the aisle. And, he is a guy who has, some strong relationships with establishment Democrats in Pennsylvania. Not that they're supporting him, not that they you know want anybody but Katie McGinty to be reelected, but you know he does have, particularly in the poisonous sort of environment that we've got now, something of a record of attempting to work with the other side. Now, to be sure, he's very conservative, especially on fiscal matters. He's one of the most conservative senators in the country. But on some of the social issues, you know, there was a big spending and deficit plan a few years ago that didn't come together, but he made some overtures there. On gun control, there have been a few issues where he's worked you know, more than a typical senator, I would say, to go across the aisle. And he's trying to cash in on those on that record with this Obama ad.
All right. And a quick look at where McGinty stands on some of these issues, just a refresher.
Well, I mean, you know, Katie McGinty is a mainline Democratic establishment candidate for Senate. She, you know, was Tom Wolf's chief of staff. Before that, she ran for governor. Before that, she was an, Governor Rendell's environmental secretary. She's has a strong resume and a long career, but she's never won elected office. And she's shooting for a big one here. And, you know, the polls have her probably up a little bit. She's had a lot of support from the National Democratic Party, and you know because you know the odds that the Senate will flip from Republican control to Democratic control ride almost entirely on Pennsylvania and some other states. But you know if the Democrats are going to retake the Senate, they've got to win in Pennsylvania.
There has been an awful lot of money spent in this race, a record breaker, over $100 million.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, all you got to do is look at the TV to see or your mailbox. It's
oh, yeah.
It's overflowing.
Well, and one more quick question before we move on to some other races. There are a couple of third party candidates that are running for U.S. Senate. Libertarian candidate Edward Clifford. What are the odds that these candidates siphon, you know, precious votes away from either candidate? What do you think?
I think pretty close to zero. None of the third party candidates have really registered in the U.S. Senate race.
Okay. So on to the race for Attorney General in Pennsylvania. You've got Republican John Rafferty versus Democrat Josh Shapiro. Two issues at play here. If Clinton wins Pennsylvania, are her coattails long enough to bring Shapiro in despite the Kathleen Kane scandal?
Yeah, so you've got two Montgomery County guys running for attorney general, and you have, of course, in Kathleen Kane, an utterly disgraced Democratic attorney general, which would look to work against Josh Shapiro, who's the Democratic nominee. He's a Montgomery County commissioner, against John Rafferty, a state senator, the Republican nominee, a capable state senator. And, you know, voters are looking here. We'll see. I mean, it hasn't been a particularly high information race, which is interesting, despite, you know, the incredible controversy around Kathleen Kane. It's almost as though the Kathleen Kane debacle drowned out, you know, all that much news about this race itself. You know, you have in Shapiro a very capable manager, a guy who has a record of in Montgomery County of coming in and cleaning up a very messy situation. You know, his argument has been that, you know, those skills and that background are exactly what the attorney general's office needs right now. The knock against him is that he doesn't have prosecutorial experience. Rafferty has some prosecutorial experience. He's been a legislator more than a prosecutor, but he does have that, you know, critical prosecutorial experience that Shapiro does not.
You're talking about information out there. How about the Auditor General's race?
Even I don't have all that much information about the Auditor General's race. You know, there's an incumbent Democrat, Eugene DePasquale, and a challenger from Northampton County. I think it's likely that, you know, if Clinton carries the state, that these lesser row offices where there's not a lot of information, that the Democrats will win. You know, especially that there's no incumbent in the treasurer's office either, because, you know, yet again, another office where another Democratic office holder, you know, lost office in a corruption scandal, Rob McCord.
All right. So on to the 8th congressional district. Hard fought race between Republican Brian Fitzpatrick. As many of us know, brother of incumbent Michael Fitzpatrick, he's retiring, and Democrat Steve Sanicero, state representative. This is said to be a toss-up by the Cook Political Report this past weekend. Surprised?
No, I mean it's a Bucks County district. It's a district that has always been very hard fought, and it's gone back and forth in recent years. You know, you have. You know, Bucks County is 50-50. I mean, it really is. And this is a district that bleeds a little bit into Montgomery County, but it's principally a Bucks County district. And, you know, we talk again about the Trump and Clinton race. And, you know, this feels like one that will very much be linked to the performance of the, you know, the top of the ticket, you know, within that district. It's a high information race as far as, you know, a congressional race goes. There's been a lot of reporting on it. There's been a lot of money spent.
Yeah, and yet Brian Fitzpatrick has been notoriously reticent when it comes to talking to the media. Has that hurt or helped him?
We'll see. You know, I don't know that it's hurt. We'll find out. You know, I mean, it's unfortunately the playbook of a lot of candidates. Hillary Clinton doesn't hold a heck of a lot of press conferences either.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So a handful of congressional races in Pennsylvania, and we should mention the 2nd congressional district, which is, you know, traditionally a Democratic congressional seat. You've got State Representative Dwight Evans, Democrat, who's running against a small business owner, Republican James Jones. But for a district seat formerly held by Chaka Fatah, convicted earlier this year on federal racketeering and bribery charges. So, again, this is a huge scandal, but despite this scandal, is Dwight Evans the overwhelming favorite?
Yeah, I mean, it's a slam dunk. This was a race that was decided in the May primary, but it is notable. I mean, you know, with the demise of Chaka Fatah, you know, you're looking at not just, you know, the unseating of a longstanding congressman, but really the demise of one of Philadelphia's formerly preeminent political machines. And Dwight Evans, you've got a guy who was extraordinarily powerful 10, 15 years ago, you know, both in Harrisburg and in Philadelphia, kind of fell on hard political times and has really rebounded in a major way. And now he's, you know, taking the 2nd congressional seat, and he'll be the congressman there as long as he wants to be, almost certainly. It's a very safe seat for Democrats. And Dwight Evans is a guy with, you know, one of the strongest bases in the city.
One of the big concerns this election is the risk for election fraud, or the election that the election might be rigged, as Donald Trump has claimed, and the threat that some of his followers might act as poll watchers this election. Now, there are some measures in place, particularly in Philadelphia, an election fraud task force. Do you have a sense of what it's early in the day, but what might be playing out across the state in terms of tension at polls? People who are coming in, say, from out of county to act as quote unquote poll watchers, even though they're not supposed to. Have you heard anything, Patrick?
Not so far. I mean, you know, there was so much buildup, so much reference from Donald Trump himself to, you know, the election scene in Philadelphia, encouraging voters, his supporters, to go and watch polls. You know, and then the Justice Department saying that they would be here in Philadelphia to watch the process. You've got watchers for the watchers for the watchers. Or at least that was the dynamic that looked like it was setting up. But honestly, my hunch and my hope is that all of that sort of blows over, and that, you know, in fact, you don't see a lot of, you know, out of county folks coming into Philadelphia to sort of do vigilante poll watching, which, you know, is that's an effort that requires a lot of organization, a lot of sort of on the ground, you know, networking and logistics,
which hasn't been a hallmark necessarily of the Trump campaign.
Yeah. It has not.
All right. Thanks for getting us started. Patrick Kirkstra, former editor at Philadelphia Magazine. We appreciate your being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. And up next, again, the phones are open, 888-477-9499. We've got calls coming in, and we are going to go to you for your thoughts on Election Day 2016. Keep it here. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Well, ready, steady, go. Election Day is finally underway, and we are gathering last-minute thoughts and sentiments from you about this marathon of an election cycle, one which has been marked by so much acrimony. One question: someone, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, will not make it to the White House. So how do we begin the process of healing a divided electorate? Here's the number, 888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or a tweet at @whyyradiotimes. So we have three guests with us now to offer their take on this election day as well. Ben Berger is associate professor of political science at Swarthmore College and is executive director of the Lang Center for Civic and Social Responsibility. He joins us in studio. Welcome, Ben.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Say welcome back. And Rebecca Berg is national political reporter for Real Clear Politics. Hi, Rebecca.
Good morning. Happy Election Day.
Yes, same to you. And Robert Costa writes for The Washington Post. Welcome, Robert.
Great to be with you.
Okay, thanks. So before we start to take calls, the candidates made their final stops of this extraordinary campaign in the wee hours of this morning, and we have some clips. We'll go to Donald Trump first. Here he is speaking in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
So to every parent who dreams for their child, and to every child who dreams for their future, I say these words to you tonight. I am with you, I will fight for you, and I will win for you, I promise. To all Americans tonight, in all of our cities and in all of our towns, I pledge to you one more time, together we will make America wealthy again. We will make America strong again. We will make America safe again, and we will make America great again. Thank you, everybody.
And here is Hillary Clinton speaking last night at her penultimate rally, held just a stone's throw away from the WHYY station at Independence Mall in Philadelphia.
Years from today, when your kids and grandkids ask what you did in 2016, when everything was on the line, I want you to be able to say that you did vote. You voted for an inclusive, big-hearted, open-minded country future that will make sure that we all keep moving together, because I do believe we are stronger together. And you voted for an America where we build bridges, not walls. And maybe most importantly, you voted in great numbers to demonstrate conclusively, once and for all, that yes, love trumps hate.
All right, and that is Hillary Clinton. So let's begin with a quick snapshot from our guests. What were your thoughts as you began this election day, Ben Berger?
Well, Rebecca said happy election day, and that would be great if it were happy. You mentioned before that voters are weary, and I'm pretty weary too. I would be very happy if all the citizens are just weary tomorrow and actually willing to get over it. And I'm a little worried, as I think a lot of people are, that weariness won't be what everyone feels, and some people will be quite agitated.
Rebecca, your thoughts?
Well, certainly voters are weary after this election cycle. I think it is a happy election day in the sense that we're all relieved it's finally here. This has been a very long campaign. I've personally been covering it since the Republican primary for almost more than 600 days, almost 700 days. And so I think Americans are ready to move on to the next step. But what is remarkable to me on this election day is that over the course of the past few months in this general election, as Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have competed for the presidency, their core messages, their core views of America and the direction the country is going in that they've been projecting to voters hasn't fundamentally changed. Fundamentally, Donald Trump has made the case that America is in a dark place, that it is not moving forward, that it has stagnated, while Hillary Clinton has been making the case to Americans almost the exact opposite, really, that America is moving forward, making great progress, and that she wants to be the one to continue that progress and to broaden it to affect even more people. And so, really, I can't think of a starker choice that we have had in a presidential election. And I'm really just fascinated to see how the results bear out this evening. It appears that it will be a very, very close result.
Yeah, we're almost there. We'll find those results out in, less than 24 hours, right? You know, depending on how tight it is. Robert Costa.
We hope so.
Yes. Well, I'm sure we all do. Robert Costa, quick snapshot of your thoughts as you began the morning.
what we're seeing today is not so much a campaign between right versus left. We're watching a test of change in the United States. How much change does this country really want? You see historic unpopularity for both of the nominees. Secretary Clinton and Donald Trump are not well liked by most Americans. But the threshold most people are thinking about today is not about an ideology. It's about are things going okay in their lives? And when I traveled across Pennsylvania over the last week, 350-mile trip, there was just so many different gradations of what people want. Western Pennsylvania seems to want radical change and maybe Donald Trump. The suburbs of Philadelphia and Philadelphia seem to want less change. Things to be seem to be going okay.
All right. As promised, we're going to go right to the calls and get our listeners right into the conversation. Todd in media, you are live on Radio Times, and welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. What's
great,
on your mind?
Great show. My message that I wanted to put out there was for anybody who's either on the fence or holding their nose. And my point was this. When I went to vote today, I'm in the 168th Pennsylvania and the 6th Senate. And I had three women to choose from on the ballot, not even looking at the presidential candidate. So that's we have never had a female U.S. senator. And I think the one running this time has a great resume and could do a good job. So if you're having a hard time making the decision to go, there's lots of reasons to go.
All right.
The other thing I wanted to say real quick, if I can.
Sure.
Related as what I told my dad today was, if you feel like you're holding your nose because there's two rotten apples, notice I think one of the rotten apples is actually a hand grenade. So that's my message.
All right, Todd's thoughts. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times. Let's talk about the representation of women in general in office, elected office on the state level and on the national level. And Rebecca Berg, you know, how does it break out in 2016?
Well, we've obviously seen over the past couple of elections a great growth in women in office and running for office. And really, one of the greatest challenges that both of the parties have faced has been getting women to run for office in the first place. We've seen that women are actually less eager to run for office, oftentimes think that they are not qualified, although they are. And so they take a little more urging to run for office in the first place. But once they do, we see that they, of course, do very well. And now we have more women senators than we have ever had, just an amazing growth in Congress in terms of representation among women. And some very important Senate races where women are on the ticket this cycle. Kelly Ayotte and Maggie Hassan in New Hampshire, two women running. Of course, you have Katie McGinty on the ticket there in Pennsylvania. And Catherine Cortez Masto out in Nevada, some very important races that will be decided and the potential to really grow the ranks of women in Congress tonight.
And over to Allentown, Pennsylvania. George, you are live on Radio Times. Hi, George.
Hi, thanks.
Sure.
Yeah, I think this election boils down to who you're against more than who you're for. I don't know of many people that say, boy, that candidate's really great. You know, and we're stuck with the choice. You know, if you point this as a women's issue, the question is: do you vote for the guy who talked crudely about women and pinched them on the court? Do you vote for somebody who volunteered to destroy the women personally, who stood in her husband's way after Bill? Did some things that Bill abused the women. She defended him in order to get him elected. In spite of it, she destroyed these women's lives.
So George, how did you determine that how you were going to handle this on election day yourself?
Well, I don't trust that Trump is going to do what he says he's going to do 100%. But the trouble is, I know Hillary's going to do what she says she's going to do, and I oppose most of her proposals. I'm not at all a fan. I can't afford health care now. We lost our health care because of the affordable health care. I don't have health care right now because of that.
So it sounds like you're leaning toward Trump, although close
Absolutely.
To a coin flip. Okay. Thanks, George, for the call into Radio Times. Coin flip for so many people, Ben Berger.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who are voting against the other candidate as opposed to being for the one that they're voting for. More Democrats report that they are actually for Hillary Clinton than against Donald Trump. More Republicans say that they're against Hillary Clinton as opposed to for Donald Trump. Very interesting. It's the highest level there's been for a Republican of not being for the Republican but being against the Democrat in quite a while.
Robert Costa, you want to weigh in?
I think we are seeing some blurring of the traditional party lines, and this is something the Republicans especially are going to have to deal with, win or lose for Donald Trump. What does the Republican Party actually mean? What does it mean to be a Republican? It used to mean you were supportive of tax cuts, perhaps like Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, sweeping changes to entitlement reforms. You were in the mold of Ronald Reagan. And now the GOP has been infused with this populism by Donald Trump, a nationalism, an anger towards trade deals, advocacy for tariffs, hardline immigration policies. It's a wholesale change to a party that really has been in the same mold for decades.
All right, let's get to John in Pottstown. John, welcome to Radio Times.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call, and good morning to everyone. I've been living in the United States since 1996, and today was the first time that I actually voted. I had a comment and kind of like a question about my experience today. The first one is when I registered to vote, I did it in a carnival, and then today is when I voted. Throughout the whole process, I don't remember or recall being asked if I was a legal resident or a citizen. Hmm. And today I was asked to furnish ID.
So you were – I'm having a – John, just 1 second because your phone line, the connection is not as good as it could be. So were you asked to show documents when you went to vote today or not?
Yes, I was asked to show an ID, a regular ID.
Okay. And you were able to vote?
Yes. So my question is, even if you are asked if they ask you if you have a Social Security or if you're a resident or a citizen, just by asking, how do they monitor to keep, I guess, if you're not a citizen from voting, or how do they do that? Because, I mean, if you live in New York, you can easily get your hands in a fake Social Security, I guess, okay, and vote.
You know what? Okay, thanks, John, for the call to Radio Times. Rebecca Berg, what are your thoughts on this? Preventing voter fraud.
Certainly, right. Certainly this is has become, especially in this election cycle, a major question as Trump has talked about the potential for a rigged election. But frankly, we have not seen evidence in past elections of any sort of widespread voter fraud. Now, there are certainly exceptions to them. There have been cases. For example, just this week, there was a case that came forward regarding a Canadian woman who has voted in elections since 1995. But these sorts of instances are very few and far between. For the most part, requiring someone to register to vote using their home address, some states that require voter ID, these sorts of basic measures prevent that sort of thing from happening. And so, frankly, in spite of Donald Trump's rhetoric, there really just hasn't been any sort of evidence of widespread voter fraud. But I think the question moving forward for us after this election, and especially this evening as we see the results come in, is as a result of Trump's rhetoric saying that the election could be rigged, talking about potential voter fraud, do people have the same sort of confidence in the results tonight as maybe they have in past election cycles or as they normally would? And are government officials going to need to do anything in the aftermath to try to reassure people in light of this rhetoric that the election system is above board and it's working as it's supposed to? And I think that's going to be a question mark tonight and moving forward.
Yeah. Ben Berger, what do you see moving forward? Should Hillary Clinton win the White House? And, of course, there are questions as to whether Donald Trump will accept a concession here. What happens next and what needs to happen next if that's the scenario?
You know, Rebecca's absolutely right, too. There is very little evidence of any kind of large-scale voter fraud. What there is evidence of on the other side is voter suppression. and it's going on now. It's gone on in states that have had early voting, in which there has been a concerted effort by Republicans to shut down the hours, to close off hours and close off polling places sometimes for early voting, especially where there was high incidences of African-American voting. That was happening in North Carolina, where there have been counties where there have been lines around the block, and in Cincinnati, too. So that won't be processed, I think, by the Trump supporters who hear only the story of rigged against them. This is the basic thing. We all are prone to believe things that we already want or already want to believe, and there's cognitive bias. So people are already known to believe that their side is more likely to win than it really is. And now Trump is talking about rigged elections. He's going to have a lot of people assuming that he is going to win and then very ready to believe that there were rigged elections. That's got to be dealt with right away. I'm not quite sure how it does get dealt with right away, but it's the most urgent thing. It's why I hope that people are just weary and not something else tomorrow.
Yeah. Robert Costa, what do you think?
I think it's really going to be a test for Donald Trump. How does he handle this moment? He is someone who is consumed by the concept of winning throughout all of his books and speeches in his life, not just this campaign. Winning is everything. It's not about policy or a point of view necessarily. It's about winning. And coping with defeat is something I think that could be very difficult for him as someone who's covered him for over 2 years now. He doesn't even like to have the thought enter his mind. And so while voter suppression or claims of voter fraud may be rampant tonight, it's really going to be a moment for a man's character to be revealed. What will Trump do should he lose?
And let's get back to voter suppression for just a moment. I wanted to look at college campuses before we get up to the break. You've got a lot of young, some very active voters, very passionate about their candidates. What are you hearing, Ben Berger, especially since you're at Swarthmore and there and at other campuses?
In Swarthmore, the local polling places, in past years, we actually have had a number of local residents who will very, very carefully check students' registration to see if there's any tiny thing wrong with it, even a letter that's wrong, and will challenge the students. And the students have been instructed then to call a hotline to get assistance with that. That's in previous years. So I haven't yet spoken today to any students who are going to the polling places now. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens again.
All right, we're talking about Election Day, taking your calls at 888-477-9499. We have to say goodbye to Rebecca Berg, Real Clear Politics national political reporter. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you for having me.
But we continue on with Robert Costa and Ben Berger, and we hope you stay with us, too. There's more just ahead. This is Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. And on this Election Day, we are hearing from you about Election Day, about what the campaigns have meant to you, about what we're doing moving forward, in your opinion. We are joined by Ben Berger in studio. He is Associate Professor of Political Science at Swarthmore College and Executive Director of the Lang Center for Civic and Social Responsibility. And also Robert Costa, who is with us as well. He is a writer for the Washington Post. And what I'm going to do is read quickly from our comment board. We've got a lot of folks who are writing in. Walt tweets, "It's ridiculous that Pat Toomey will not admit he supports Trump. It's an insult to voters." Tweet from Rob, "Voted Evan McMullen today in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. First time in my life didn't vote Republican for president. So very sad." That's from Rob. Allison comments, "This is my first time voting. This election has been crazy." And we hear from Dave, who says, "I'm in a mostly sleepy township, but this time it was different. It was crowded." And so back to the phones we go. Let's go to Dr. Kenny, who is on the highway as he joins us for Radio Times. Hi, Dr. Kenny. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I was at the rally last night, and oh my goodness, the feeling of unity and camaraderie around love, Trump's hate, and what I couldn't believe, and right, it's not realistic that this is really going to happen, but, you know, the number of people that were talking about being so adamantly opposed to a Trump win, and so fearful that they would actually be considering leaving the country because of the outright outrage about the possibility of someone that spews such venom and such hate potentially being in our White House.
So,
and even from people that don't necessarily fully support Hillary, but there's a level of sanity there versus the insanity, and again, the outright hate.
So just a quick question for you before we let you go. Just wanted to know, you know, if Donald Trump does happen to win the presidential race, in your opinion, how do we move forward?
Oh, my gosh.
I think that's the first time I've left a caller speechless. I'm so sorry.
I'm serious. I'm one of those people that is considering leaving the country. I have colleagues in New Zealand who I've actually talked with about bringing myself and my family and loved ones just to get it. I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I'm afraid.
All right. Well, listen, we have to let you go, but thank you so much for checking in with us here at Radio Times. And Ben Berger, what do you think about her sentiments?
I want to mention that although I'm going to try to be impartial here, I was with my family last night at the rally, and we waited in line for over 2 hours and did not get in the end. There were so many people there. So I think they were so worried about a low turnout that they wanted to give as many passes out as possible. And figuring that the people there, if a lot of people get turned away, which we did and many others did as well, they're so on board, they're going to go out and vote anyway. We did. My kids were pretty ticked off. They got to worry about that next generation. They wanted to see Bruce Springsteen and John Bon Jovi. I don't actually think people are going to leave the country. I think people talked about it when George Bush won in 2004 and in 2000 and didn't actually do it. I think most people are going to stay behind and resist and try to be part of that resistance. But I understand the sentiment on both sides. Both sides are afraid of what might happen if the other one wins.
Boy, but Robert Costa, that sentiment makes it seem so difficult to take that first step forward.
The country's been through moments like this before, of acrimony, of deep national division. You think about the 1968 election, similar dynamics, a silent majority versus an establishment Democrat. You think to 1964, the Republicans have been in the hole before. With Barry Goldwater, and it seemed like the end of the Republican Party. They came back. Democrats seemed done after George McGovern in 1972. My point is, on days like this, and emotions are high, there's a tendency for people to say, I'm leaving the country, or this is the apocalypse. But America, it's sustained itself pretty well so far, and it likely will in the future.
All right, let's get to Bill in South Philadelphia. You are live on Radio Times. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just voted this morning, and it's a quick point, and it's been driving me nuts. There's actually 5 people running for president, not 2. And even if you don't like those 5, you can write in a candidate. I think this binary that everybody's worked up about is false, and I blame the media for a lot of that. I just want to make that point. Yeah. You can vote for 5 different people. You can vote for Gandalf and Darth Vader if you want, but it's not just Clinton Trump. And this idea that it's only Clinton Trump or you're throwing away your vote is false.
Well put, Bill. Thank you.
We're in the situation we're in now because of people saying there's only 2 people. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. Robert, were you trying to get in there?
Yeah, just a couple thoughts. The caller brings up an important point, and I see this in all my reporting. You look at a place like Utah. There's a chance tonight Evan McMullen, this independent conservative, could win a state in the general election and go to the Electoral College and actually get electoral votes. I mean, that's a historical thing if it happens. When I was traveling throughout Philadelphia suburbs, I was in Newtown and Yardley and Montgomery County. I met so many Republicans especially who said, I'm going to go for McMullen or I'm going to go for Gary Johnson. the Libertarian, or Democrats who are for Bernie Sanders in the primary, they say, I'm going to go for Jill Stein and the Green Party. And though a Trump victory would be almost a Brexit-like moment in the United States, if there's not a Trump victory tonight, I think you're seeing the splintering of the major parties in a way we have not seen before. And that's going to have repercussions throughout the coming years.
So if you have a splintering of the major parties again, might there actually be a competitive third party that arises out of that, Robert?
I think the problem third parties face is that you have to have a farm team. You just can't start at the national level in a presidential race and expect to build some kind of coalition. The challenge for these parties is, can they build coalitions? Can they build numbers in the state legislatures, in the U.S. House, maybe even elect a senator or two? That's how you have it in the parliamentary system. You got to start at the ground level, and we just haven't seen that type of organization yet from these parties.
We've got a tweet from P. Edward, who says, I was an elected delegate to the Pennsylvania 8th District in 1984. I'm a Republican now and voted for Trump. I didn't so much leave the party as much as the party left me. And I'm assuming Edward was talking about the Democratic Party. Why might people be leaving the Democratic Party and moving toward a candidate like Donald Trump? Lindberger, what do you think?
Well, it seems to me that it's significantly a protest vote, a vote of frustration. There's a lot of frustrated people. Bernie Sanders tapped into that, and he's not on the docket right now. So there have been some people that I've heard about who say, I was voting for Bernie Sanders earlier, and now I'm voting for Trump. I find that fairly incomprehensible at a rational level because they're so very different. And yet I understand that, first of all, right in this election, we're seeing different kinds of rationality. I understand it's out there. I think people ought to be careful of what they wish for because they just might get it.
All right. This is your show. Our listeners, 888-477-9499. And so we head to Brooklawn, New Jersey, and I say hello to Teresa. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I voted this morning. I voted for Hillary Clinton. A big issue for me is what happens to the Supreme Court if Donald Trump should be elected. I kind of feel like we need moderate judges in the Supreme Court, not, you know, very far right. And I fear that's what will happen and, you know, set women's health issues and civil liberties issues back by years if Donald Trump becomes president.
Thank you for the call and the comment, Teresa. You know, it's hard to parse where Donald Trump is. He is his own person, Robert Costa. And therefore, you know, if I ask you to look into the crystal ball here about whom he might choose if he does end up being president or nominate for the Supreme Court, it might not be easy to pin that down.
Well, what we see with Donald Trump is someone who has a small inner circle. The people in his ear are really two main people at the moment, and it's Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, who's built connections and relationships for Trump within the Republican Party, and Steve Bannon, the former head of Breitbart, the conservative website, who's now Trump's CEO. And there's this populism that at the core of how these conversations are happening behind the scenes in Trump Tower. And when they're thinking through an administration, whether people think it's fanciful or not, there is a transition team in the Trump campaign. They're looking at people like Newt Gingrich, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, the usual surrogates you see for Trump. But they're also thinking about names that we've never heard of, people from outside of politics to try to underscore if Trump wins that he's an outsider coming to Washington. And you could see friends of his like Tom Barrack, the California-based investor, really have high positions in government. In a way, as looking back to history, it reminds me of Jimmy Carter. I mean, Jimmy Carter came out of nowhere in 1976. He's nothing like Donald Trump, but he came out of nowhere and he brought his friends from Georgia and different kinds of people into the government that kind of ruptured the system back in 1977.
Now, if Hillary Clinton were to win the White House and the Senate were to stay majority Republican, you know, then perhaps we've got gridlock, especially on this issue, for the next 4 years, Lindberger.
That's right. There's been an announced intention not to ratify justices. Now, I don't know if they could actually hold out for 4 years refusing to ratify. I mean, they don't need to have nine justices. I think it'd be very difficult. It's never happened before. It's certainly the case that it's the time to ratify Supreme Court justice has gone way up over what it used to be. It used to be much less deliberation, much less time. It'd be a very tall order and really something quite extraordinary to refuse for 4 years to ratify someone.
All right. Let's get to Gil in Northeast Philly. Welcome to Radio Times, Gil.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to say that only when Mrs. Hillary going to win Pennsylvania, if she's going to have a very heavy African-American turnout, and she needs at least a 400,000 votes lead over Mr. Trump in Philadelphia, Montgomery, Chester, and Bucks County. And right now, she don't have that much turnout, which looks like. And on the other side, Mr. Trump have a very heavy turnout. And you're going to see Northeast Philadelphia and in other counties.
So, Gil,
and he's going to win.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds as if you're guessing that Donald Trump will win Pennsylvania.
Yes, ma'am. All they think he needs is a 25% vote in four surrounding counties, Philadelphia, Chester, Bucks, and Montgomery. If he would be able to pull 25% in here, he's winning state already. Yeah. So,
well, I'm going to have to let you go because we're up against the clock, but thank you so much for the call to Radio Times. Ben?
I think it's very unlikely that Donald Trump wins Pennsylvania. I trust the polling numbers, which are very robust among the people who are doing the aggregation, and I trust the ground game. The ground game in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh has been nothing short of amazing. That was the difference last time around with Obama. I think it's going to be the same difference this time around for Hillary Clinton.
All right, over to Philadelphia and Jeremy. Jeremy, you are on Radio Times for this. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You sure?
I just want to make a comment on the way that this election is finally finished up. We've seen polarization in elections before, dating back to Adams and Jefferson, but I feel like this election has polarized the American people in a way that now, if Hillary gets elected and the Senate is not a majority Democrat, they're going to be voting to basically do whatever it takes to stop the other party and not necessarily voting to do what is best for the American people and move us forward. I don't know how we get away from all this polarization and back to common sense politics and voting for what is best for the American people overall, even if you disagree with the other side.
Yeah, I hear you, Jeremy. Thanks for the call to Radio Times, a $64,000 question. How do we move forward from this sense of polarization? And actually, it's interesting, Peter Wenner, a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, who is a Republican, says that here's how the Republican Party has to change. And one of his points is political recklessness, and that a large number of Republicans began to dismiss the art of governing, the craft of governing, and embrace a style of politics characterized by unceasing combativeness. Not only Republicans, of course, the Democratic Party, too, is guilty here. How do we erase that and turn the clock back to a time in which there was perhaps a little bit more reaching across the aisle, Ben?
I'm not sure you're going to see it, first of all, if Hillary Clinton is the person who wins, because she's not that well-liked by a lot of the country. It might mean that it takes another election cycle until there is somebody, or two, until there's somebody who is better liked. The other thing is that what makes this so difficult is the presence of digital cable, the presence of internet news, the fragmentation, which has led to so much polarization because candidates like Trump are able to go straight to the electorate and not be filtered through parties, not be filtered even through traditional journalism as much as they once were. That presents a really difficult – parties are weak. Partisanship is strong. And so once somebody wins the nomination, they're able to – almost become president, perhaps. That's a really difficult scenario.
And Robert Costa, the media does have to take its share of blame here.
Blame for what?
Perhaps unfiltered coverage or coverage is not as discerning. Do we need to do that or no? I'm not talking about you necessarily. I'm talking about an umbrella.
I know. I just think this navel-gazing in the media is a little much. I think the candidates in both parties need to be given as much scrutiny as possible, as many investigations as we can, and we need to have a cold eye and a tough approach. But this idea that the media created Donald Trump, as someone who's covered the Republican Party for years, this was an institution that had collapsed, that had a vacuum of power, that had lost its core principles in many ways, and had a leadership that was destabilized. And that enabled Donald Trump to waltz in, beat many other contenders. I don't think it was the media.
Fair enough, Robert Costa. And Ben, you've got about 20 seconds.
I just want to say I agree. I don't think it's the media per se. The media is doing its job. They're giving people what sells. So the question is, when you're able to have an unfiltered market, what sells is sometimes going to push you far towards one side.
All right. Well, stay tuned, everybody. We've got lots of coverage here coming up on Election Day. Ben Berger, it was a pleasure. Associate Professor of Political Science at Swarthmore College. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Robert Costa of the Washington Post. Great to have you along.
Thank you.
And as always, don't forget to check out our Facebook page and podcasts. Simply head to whyy.org/Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, as always. Thank you for joining us for Radio Times.